As you write your life story, you're far from finished. Are you looking to close the book on your job? Maybe turn a page in your career? Be continued at the Georgetown University School of Continuing Studies. Our professional master's degrees and certificates are designed to meet you where you are and take you where you want to go. At Georgetown SCS, the learning never stops, and neither do you. Write your next chapter. Be continued at scs.georgetown.edu/podcast.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hi, I'm Wendy.
And I'm Jess, and you're listening to the Food Heaven Podcast,
your online resource for inclusive and accessible wellness.
Welcome back to another episode of the Food Heaven Podcast. If you are tuning in for the first time to our podcast, welcome. We are both registered dietitians, and this podcast is all about wellness from an inclusive perspective. And right now, we are doing a series all about habits. So this is our final episode in our habit series. If you haven't seen the other episodes, make sure to scroll up and check those out after you listen to this one. And today we are talking with Gretchen Rubin, who is one of the most influential and thought-provoking observers of happiness and human nature. And it's interesting because on Instagram, I asked you guys a couple of weeks ago who you wanted to have on the podcast to talk about habits, and 90% of you responded with Gretchen Rubin. So we are so excited to get to talk to Gretchen today all about how to form new habits.
Yeah, and Gretchen has written several books, including Better Than Before, The Four Tendencies, and The Happiness Project. She has sold millions of copies. She's a New York Times bestseller. She's also the host of the Happier with Gretchen Rubin podcast. It has over 220 million downloads. So, you know, clearly she has a lot of good information to share. We were over the moon to be able to bring her on our podcast to share all of this with y'all.
Yeah. And this is a great conversation to wrap up our habit series, because this is where we get into a lot of the evidence. Gretchen originally wrote a book about happiness, and she talked about different habits to adopt in order to be happy. But what happened was a lot of people were having a hard time adopting the habits. So then she decided that she wanted to do research into the different personalities for how to actually adopt habits and what different studies had to say. So today we're going to talk about the four different personality types that are critical when it comes to forming new habits, and how you can identify which personality type you are and how to do a better job of staying consistent with whatever habits that you want to form. We also talk about how there are no hierarchies within these categories and the pros and cons of each of them, whether or not you can be two categories at once. And it was interesting because she said, if you're asking the question about whether or not you can be in two categories, you're probably in this category. Gretchen also shares some strategies that research shows are helpful for adopting new habits. One of them I have been doing with my cell phone use, and I didn't even realize I was doing it, and how you can all get started today with forming habits in the new year. So if you are wanting concrete information and wanting to understand yourself better when it comes to habits, you definitely want to listen to this episode all the way until the end.
And we, of course, are doing a giveaway. We're entering 2023 big, doing weekly giveaways. We'll see how long this lasts. We'll see how much our budget allows. But for this week, we're doing two, actually. So if you DM us the word quiz, you will get Gretchen Rubin's Four Tendencies quiz, and you'll learn more about that if you listen to this episode, what that is about and why it's useful. So yeah, on Instagram, just DM us the word quiz. Y'all, please don't add like any exclamation points, question marks, because you won't automatically get it. Because a lot of people have been sending us, you know, the words that we say to DM us, but then you put like other stuff in it. So only the word quiz. That's it. Now, for the other giveaway, we thought it would be really helpful in talking about habits to do a giveaway for an intuitive eating journal. And this was created by Elise Riche, who is a registered dietitian. She created this journal that supports you in creating a nourishing and healthy relationship to food. There's a lot of practical prompts that will come up. And so we're going to be giving away 3 of those journals. All you have to do is share this episode on your IG, whether on stories or on your feed. Make sure that you tag us. It'll go to our DM and then you'll automatically be entered and we'll announce the winner next week.
Yes. And I have to say, with the sharing, because a lot of times it seems like people just take a screenshot and send it to us, but we're saying like share it on your feed. I feel like 80% of the time people are like, oh yeah, let me share that I'm listening. But the idea is to get other people to hear about the podcast. So please share on your feed. And like when he said,
or not, it doesn't have to be on your feed though. You can share it on your stories.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Sorry. And just tag us. You don't have to DM us a screenshot of you listening to the episode. And like Wendy said, yes, send us the word quiz and please send it on Instagram because we've been getting emails. Hey, I don't want to Instagram. Can you just send it? It's like, guys, we're trying to make this streamlined for everybody. So just send it on Instagram quiz, nothing else. Thank you.
Okay. And now the review. We want to highlight a listener review. This one is from KH Hines, and they write, I've listened to Food Heaven since 2019, and I absolutely love the perspective that Wendy and Jess have towards health and wellness. These episodes have provided so much inspiration on my own wellness journey and have helped me to feel a sense of virtual community as well. Whenever I get into convos about my favorite platforms, I always mention Food Heaven. Thank you for making wellness accessible and real. Oh, thank love you. It. So sweet. Thank you so much for leaving that review, KH Hines. And if you haven't already, you know the drill. Make sure you go on iTunes or Spotify, drop some stars, preferably 5, and you can leave some sweet words and we read all of them. So we might highlight your review on a future episode. All right. With that being said, we are going to get into it. You started off writing about happiness, but then you moved into talking about habits, which is so specific. Tell us about what made you decide about habits, because it is such a specific topic. And as dietitians, it's so relevant to us. So it's something that we're really interested about.
Well, you know, when I started talking to people about happiness, and especially after the Happiness Project came out, what I realized is that a lot of times people knew perfectly well that something would make them happier, like if they got more sleep or they ate more healthfully or they spent more time with friends or they spent more time outside or they got back into tennis or whatever, but they weren't doing it for whatever reason, even though they knew that it would make them happier. And when I started really trying to understand it, I realized it was actually a problem of habit formation, that for some reason people knew that something would make them happier, healthier, more productive, or more creative, but they were not approaching it as a habit challenge. So that got me very interested in how people successfully make or break habits or why they don't. And that got me really, really deep into the world of how and why can we change our habits.
So y'all know we are dietitians and diabetes educators, and it is widely known that blood sugar levels can significantly impact how your body feels and functions. Our podcast partner this week, NutriSense, lets you analyze in real time how glucose levels respond to food, exercise, stress, and sleep. So how it works is NutriSense is a continuous glucose monitor, which is a small device that tracks your glucose levels in real time. The application is very easy and painless. You just download the app. It was like 4 steps. As a diabetes educator, I've tried CGMs in the past and I'm always scared, like, ooh, it's going to hurt when you put it on, you know, your arm or wherever you're supposed to put it. But this one was completely painless. I was like, wait, that's it? Also, each device lasts for 14 days. And with the NutriSense app, you can scan your CGM and visualize the data. You can also see how your blood glucose raises or stays stable with certain meals and food combinations. So this is interesting data because it shows that we are all different and how our body responds to foods is unique and individual. The other thing I loved about NutriSense was that they had dietitian guidance. And even me as a dietitian, they were like, oh, we see you're a dietitian, but we're here to support you. And they kept checking in on me to see if I had any questions or if I needed any support whatsoever. Your dietitian will help you interpret the data and provide suggestions based on your goals. This is what truly sets NutriSense apart from other CGM-related programs. I also like how NutriSense takes a holistic approach and isn't just focused on how your blood sugar is affected by food, but the program also emphasizes, like I mentioned, stress, sleep, and how joyful movement will impact your blood glucose levels. So whether you have diabetes or pre-diabetes, or you're just curious about how your activities throughout your day impact your blood glucose levels, NutriSense can be a really great program for you to try. Visit NutriSense.io/foodheaven and use the code foodheaven to save $30 and get 1 month of free dietitian support. That's NutriSense, NutriSense.io/foodheaven. Now let's get back to the episode. We were talking before we started recording about just how, as a dietitian, I have incorporated your work into my private practice, because understanding how somebody adopts habits can be really helpful in figuring out why certain methods haven't worked for them, or what may work for them. So can you talk about that? Like, why is it so important to know your nature before you're able to adopt new habits?
This is the thing, is you really have to know yourself and what works for you. And I think a lot of times, and I was definitely one of these people myself, where we think, well, there's the right way or the best way or like the one, the most researched way. And if somebody just told you the right thing to do, then you could change your habits. But that doesn't work, or we would all have perfect habits. And I think a lot of times people get discouraged if they've tried and failed to form a habit, and they might try over and over and they say, well, this works for my sister-in-law, or it works for my best friend, or it works for my sweetheart. It should work for me. Instead of saying like, well, just because something works for somebody else doesn't necessarily mean it'll work for me, and vice versa. Just because something works for me doesn't mean that I know how to tell everybody else what to do. And you really have to think about yourself. When have I succeeded in the past? What kind of things help me change my behavior? Because there's no magic one size fits all solution. You know, you can't just like download a one pager from the internet and follow the instructions, because we're all so different. I mean, you see this with morning people and night people. You know, you often see the advice like, oh, something's important to you, get up and do it first thing in the morning, which is great advice for morning people. But like 30% of people are like really night people, and they're at their most productive and creative and energetic later in the day. And so it's not that it's not good advice for some people, but it's not good advice for everyone, because for some people, they'd be much better off trying to do something challenging when it fits more into their energy.
Right. Or their personality, which is something that I wanted you to touch on, because sometimes like someone's personality type can also affect how they go about creating habits and like just maintaining habits as well. Yes. And you write about like the upholder, the questioner, the rebel, the obliger. So I have a question about just like, you know, how that all plays into habits, but also, is it possible to have like a little bit of each habit? Like, I feel like with personality types, I'm like, oh, well, maybe I'm a little bit of the questioner and a little bit of the upholder. Is that possible? Or do most people like resonate mostly with like one personality
type? Well, here's the thing. Really, people are very strongly within one type. If you feel strongly that you are a little bit of each one, that's a sign that you're a questioner, because questioners are like, well, if it makes sense, I'll act like an upholder. But if it doesn't make sense, I'll act like a rebel. And I'm like, you're saying you'll do whatever makes sense. You're like, well, why would I do that? That's questioner. So really believing that you're a little bit of each is itself a signal of questioner. But I can go through all four. And should I go through all four and explain them?
Yeah, that would be helpful.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So this can sound a little dry, but it gets very juicy. So like, listeners, stay with us. This is a framework called the Four Tendencies. And as Wendy was saying, it divides people into upholders, questioners, obligers, and rebels. And what it's looking at is something very specific, but very significant, which is how you respond to expectations. So there are outer expectations like a work deadline, and then there are inner expectations like, I want to keep a New Year's resolution. So depending on whether you meet or resist outer and inner expectations, that's what makes you an upholder, a questioner, an obliger, or a rebel. So upholders are people who readily meet outer and inner expectations. They keep the work deadline, they keep the New Year's resolution without much fuss. They want to know what other people expect from them, but their expectations for themselves are just as important. So their motto is, discipline is my freedom. Then there are questioners. Questioners question all expectations. They'll do something if they think it makes sense. They need reasons, justifications. They tend to love research. They tend to love to customize. These are the people who are asking why. So they're making everything an inner expectation. If it meets their inner standard, they will do it no problem. If it fails their inner standard, they'll push back. So their motto is, I'll comply if you convince me why. Then there are obligers. This is the biggest tendency for both men and women. Obligers readily meet outer expectations, but they struggle to meet inner expectations. So these are the people who say, why is it that I can keep my promises to other people, but I can't keep my promises to myself? Or they say, why do I struggle to make time to self-care? Or I need to make myself a priority. These are the sign of obliger. So the secret for obligers is very straightforward. Even to meet an inner expectation, they need outer accountability. If you want to read more, join a book group. If you want to exercise more, take a class with an instructor who knows if you don't show up, work out with a friend who'll be annoyed if you don't show up, take your dog for a run, raise money for a charity, think of your duty to your future self. There are a lot of ways to create outer accountability when you know that's what you need. So obligers really go the extra mile for other people, but they have to have that outer accountability if they're going to meet their inner expectations. So their motto is, you can count on me, and I'm counting on you to count on me. And then finally, rebels. Rebels resist all expectations, outer and inner alike. They want to do what they want to do in their own way, in their own time. They tend to love a challenge, but if you ask or tell them to do something, they're very likely to resist. And typically they don't tell themselves what to do because no one tells me what to do, not even me. So their motto is, you can't make me and neither can I. Yeah. So obliger is the biggest tendency. Rebel is the smallest tendency. But I do think that almost just about all of us do fall within one tendency.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask about the obliger and questioner scenario, because I felt like I was half and half. But now that I'm hearing from you, if you're questioning it, you're a questioner. That makes sense, because I do question everything. And if it is something that I believe in, and for me, it's all about the research and what works for me too and what makes sense, I will do it. But if I don't buy in, I'm not going to do it. Or if you're not convincing me, and really I have to convince myself by doing the research on my own.
Yes.
But okay, so when we talk about these four tendencies, you write in your book, you're the upholder. My husband's an upholder. I have a lot of patients who are rebels. Like, people think upholder is good, right? And rebel is bad. But you say that it's, like, each one has pros and cons. Can you talk about why there's no hierarchy within these four tendencies?
Yeah. And I should say, most people know what they are just from like the way we'll talk about it, they'll figure it out. But if you want to take a quiz and like get an answer and a little report, you can just go to my website, go to GretchenRubin.com/quiz, and you can take a quiz and get a report that will have all this. But okay. So all of these tendencies have a lot of strengths, but also sort of the corresponding weaknesses. And so when you look at the people who are happiest, healthiest, most productive, and most creative, it's not the people of a particular tendency. It's the people who've really figured themselves out. And they figured out how to get what they need, how to create circumstances that work for them. Okay, so you're a questioner married to an upholder. I'm an upholder married to a questioner. And it's really valuable for me to have a questioner, because I sometimes too readily do things. And it's very helpful for me to turn to him and say, do you think I should do this? And he'll say, why would you do that? And so I found a way to get that questioning element into my life in a way that's really helpful. A lot of obligers have figured out even just sort of unconsciously that they need accountability. So they'll sign up for classes, or they'll give themselves a tough boss, or they'll create situations where they have the accountability that they need, and then they can achieve their aims. So everybody can achieve their aims, but you might have to like set up your circumstances and your situation so that you have what you need. Because like an obliger needs accountability, but of course a rebel might resist that accountability. So a structure that could work really well for an obliger could actually not be good for a rebel. They can both do what they want to do, but they would have to set things up differently to suit their tendencies.
Yeah. Can you give a couple examples for each personality type of like just practical things that someone could do, for example, if they are an upholder, to be able to create habits and actually stick with them?
Yeah. So first, upholders, that's the easiest to talk about, because this is the kind of thing that comes easily to upholders, maybe even too easily to upholders, because upholders sometimes have what's tight is tightening when the rules get tighter and tighter and tighter, and they can get kind of cramped, and they have to remember like, if these rules aren't serving me, I can use my inner expectation to put it aside. So they're pretty good. Like what they need is very clear expectations, both outer and inner. So like, what am I asking of myself? What exactly does that look like? I want it to be very concrete. It can't be something like eat more healthfully. That's pretty vague. really break it down so that I can execute on that. And upholders tend to like things like to-do lists, calendars. They like those kind of execution tools. Questioner, it's all about the why. Why are we saying that this is a good idea to do? What is the reason? What is the rationale? But beyond that, like, how is it customized to you? So you can't say something like, well, you should get up and go for a walk every day before breakfast, because it's, you know, a mile for before breakfast, because it'd be like, why before breakfast? Why a mile? Why am I walking? Maybe I should be skipping. Maybe I should be running. Maybe I should be running backwards. Maybe I should be swimming. You know, why? So really, once they have that why, they resist anything arbitrary. So if you throw out a number, okay, why five? Why not seven? Why not three? You have to really be able to back up all of that. Right. And then like, if you're dealing with clients or customers, a lot of times they need a lot more reasons. And that can also make you defensive. Sometimes people feel almost attacked by people who are asking a lot of questions, because it makes them feel like they're questioning their judgment or undermining their authority. But questioners are just trying to understand. Once they have that understanding, they will get on it. Now, questioners sometimes can fall into analysis paralysis. This is when their desire for perfect information makes it hard for them to move forward or make a decision. So you can sometimes remind them, hey, you know, don't get it perfect, get it started. If you start, you can experiment. If something doesn't work out, you've learned, you know, it's more efficient to get started than to wait for perfection. You can do all these things to help get over that analysis paralysis. For an obliger, it's very simple. They need outer accountability. And it's not priority. It's not self-care. It's not getting clear on what you want. It's not putting yourself first. It's about creating outer accountability. And there are so many ways to create outer accountability once you realize that that is what you need. And obligers are very different. Like, some obligers can use what I would consider very imaginative forms of accountability, like thinking about their duty to their future self. But some need like actual accountability from a real person. Some, if they pay, like, oh, I'm paying this nutritionist to meet with me every week, I have to do it. Some, it's almost like, well, listen, I paid for that hour and she gets paid even if I don't show up. So if I don't show up, she gets the money and she gets the time back. That's better for her. It's like, oh no, no, I want you showing up, you know? So you need to create that outer accountability. And they're so imaginative. It's hilarious what obligers come up with. So ingenious. Yeah. And then with a rebel, rebel is, I would say, the trickiest. They're the most different from the other three. And what works with rebels typically is identity. So it's not, you're not doing what you're supposed to do or what you said you would do or what other people expect from you or what your doctor says or any of that. It's like, this is your identity. You're a person who loves to tap into her body and feel energetic and healthy. You're a person who loves to experiment with like interesting new recipes and ingredients. You love to exercise because you love to feel strong and vital. And maybe you've fallen away from that, but now you're going to get back into it. You've always been an athlete. You've always been a nature lover. You've always been a dog lover. You respect your body. So it's like tying into an identity, because once the identity is really articulated, rebels will put that identity into the world. Or you can give them information, consequences, choice. This is when you give them the information they need, tell them the consequences of their action or inaction, and then you let them decide. You can be like, look, I mean, we know from research what, you know, pre-diabetes looks like. You know, it's this, this, and this. And what we found is people who develop diabetes, well, they're dependent on medication and, you know, this, this, and this. Up to you. You know, no nudging, no reminding, often not even encouraging. It's just like, this is the information. These are the consequences of what you can choose to do. And then it's up to you. And what's hard for others than rebels to remember is that sometimes when we try to remind and encourage, we actually get in the way of the rebels because we ignite their spirit of resistance. And so often with a rebel, you're better off just like backing away and like letting them do things in their own way, in their own time. And the more you try to get in there, the more you may impede them.
Yeah. It reminds me of when I used to work in a clinic and a lot of patients would be referred to me. And it's not that they wanted to necessarily see the dietitian on their own. It's like the doctor saying, oh, you need to do this. That's where I would get the rebels. In my private practice, it's mostly obligers, I would say, because the accountability of working with someone. But with the rebels, I think from a dietitian perspective, they're great for motivational interviewing, right? Because one of the concepts of motivational interviewing is like rolling with resistance and kind of, as you mentioned, talking about the pros of doing something and the cons of not doing anything and putting the ball in their court and helping them come up with the why for themselves and not being so pushy, which I think a lot of healthcare providers, we feel like we're helping by being really pushy and telling people what to do, but knowing people's personalities and that that's not going to work for certain people, it can help empower them to make that move if they choose to at whatever point. So that's super helpful.
No, 100%. And so with the questioner, you want to give them the why, all the information, all the data, all the research, whereas the other tendencies are kind of overwhelmed by that. They don't need that. The obligers, like, they really benefit from that accountability. And but then the rebels, and one thing rebels will say to me sometimes, because I'll be like, well, sometimes like you actually hire somebody to help you do something, but then they tell you what to do. Like, I'm hiring you to help me refinance my mortgage, but now you keep asking me for all these forms. And what the rebels say is sometimes it can help to be like, to remind a rebel, I'm here for you. I'm doing what you want, you know? And so you remind them, like, I'm basically under your control. You are telling me what you want, because that's what they want. This is my choice. This is my freedom. This is an expression of my desires. And the more you're like, and like you say, the why, it's like, and reminding them of like, well, why would you want this? What are the consequences? It's like, I'm here to help you to get whatever you want. You tell me. And then they're kind of have that feeling of being in the driver's seat, which is so important for the rebels.
Yeah.
Because if you say to them something like, well, this is what the doctor says, they're going to be like, well, no one tells me what to do. You know, I don't follow doctor's orders, you know, because just the phrase doctor's orders.
Right. Yeah. It can be a turnoff.
Yeah, it really can be a turnoff.
So in your book, Better Than Before, you also talk about strategies to help make or break habits, right? And we're doing this habit series and you've done a lot of research on these topics. So let's say somebody wants to feel better physically and improve their health, and they want to create the habit of exercise. Aside from the four tendencies, are there any other strategies that are some of your favorite, like, I don't know, one or two to try to get started?
Yeah, some strategies are very particular and only work for some people or only work sometimes. And then some work a lot of the time. So one of my favorite strategies, and it works really well for exercise, is pairing. So the strategy of pairing is when you take two activities, one is something that you want to get yourself to do, like exercise, and you pair it with something that you either really enjoy doing or that you basically have to do. So if there's a podcast that you really love, like this podcast, or a really exciting audiobook, or it's something that you have to do, like somebody was telling me that she got herself to floss because she's like, well, you can't brush your teeth until you floss. And she's like, well, I would never start my day without brushing my teeth. So now she has to floss. So that's the strategy of pairing. And then another strategy that you can use kind of in either direction, these are the twin strategies of convenience and inconvenience. So to kind of a hilarious degree, we're more likely to do things if they're more convenient. So those are two that really work very universally.
Yeah, I love the inconvenience. Even with something as simple as trying to be on my phone less. So the inconvenient thing is like deleting Instagram permanently. Mm-hmm. And then also downloading an app where it like blocks me from even re-downloading Instagram. That's like even deleting, it's not enough. And even simple things like not sleeping with your phone in the room with you, like putting it in another room. It just makes it so when you wake up, it's not like a huge distraction as it normally would be if it's like right there. And I'm like, okay, like what's happening online? So I think that the convenience and inconvenience is really helpful.
Here's another one on that with the phone is you can turn your phone to grayscale. It's very easy. You just do it in settings. And then your phone is in black, white, and gray instead of color. And it's just much less convenient. It's like much harder for your eye to figure out like where the links are. And of course, photographs are not as interesting. The whole thing is just a much less compelling. And yet you can still do everything you need to do. Like if you need to check your email or you need to use a map or something, you can, but it's just harder on your eyes because you don't have color to give you all of that, all those cues, and also to make it, you know, so enticing. So you're right. There's a lot of ways to use inconvenience to just direct us away from behaviors that we're trying to avoid.
Do you permanently have it on grayscale?
That was my question.
No, you know, I'm not that enticed by my phone.
Okay.
I don't find that to be a big temptation myself. So I don't, but it also works great if you have kids who always want to be on a device. You can just say to them, oh, I'm sorry, it's broken. We have to get that fixed one day. Cause it's like, it's not that much fun to watch cartoons if it's in black and white. Yeah.
I'm going to do that permanently.
Yeah. There you go.
All right. So with habits, like we talk a lot about SMART goals when, you know, just creating goals that are practical, achievable. How specific do people need to be with habits? Is it helpful to be like just super to the T about what it is that you're going to be doing and how you're going to do it? Or does it depend on the personality type?
I'm with you. I think you want to keep it very specific and very concrete and very manageable, because it's very easy to have these vague resolutions like, I want to get more fun out of life, or I want to save more, or I want to eat healthier. But I always think with a habit, you want to articulate it in a way where it's like, if you get in bed at night, it's like, did you do this? Yes or no? Like, I had the Happier app. I created this app that has all these habit change tools in it. And one of them is don't break the chain. That's the most, to my surprise, that's kind of the most popular thing. It's like, do you know, did you, and maybe it's a habit that you don't intend to do every day. Not every habit is something that you want to do every day, but it's like, did you do this today? Do you know? Because it's like, I want to appreciate the moment. It's like on any one day, you're like, did I appreciate the moment? It's so vague. That's another strategy of monitoring, where you just know whether and how much you're doing something. And what's really interesting is research shows that even if you monitor a behavior, even without trying to change it. So like, let's say you monitor how much you spend, or you monitor how much time you spend reading to your children or whatever it is. By monitoring it, just the act of monitoring it, you will tend to do a better job. You'll do it more or less, whatever you're aiming for, just because you're aware of it. And so monitoring is one of these things where if you feel like, oh, I can't even deal with trying to change anything, just monitor how much you're doing it. And that might help you just move in the right direction. But the only way you can monitor something is if it is very concrete. Oh, and another thing I think is important is to focus on action, not outcomes. If I'm like, I'm going to write 1,000 words every day, that is an action that I can follow. But then outcomes are often, they're just harder to control. Sometimes they're totally not within our control. And sometimes that we just don't have a good sense of what our actions are leading to. But actions are very much within what we can consciously direct.
Yeah. How did you come up with all of this? I know I read you have several books, but Better Than Before. And from what I remember, you talked about there weren't that many books on forming habits. So can you talk about like how you came up with these different tendencies and these tips?
Yeah. So I wrote The Happiness Project, and then everybody kept saying to me like, well, how did you get yourself to do all these things? And I thought, well, I just decided to do them and I thought they would make me happier. And if they did, I just kept up with them. And people were like, wait, what are you talking about? And then I was like, okay, something is coming easily to me that's not coming easily to other people. And around the same time, my mother was saying that she wanted to get back into the habit of exercising. And I was like, okay, well, how do you form a habit? And I realized like there's a lot of research kind of about habit formation. And there were a lot of people who sort of advocated like very like specific things, like this is the answer. But it was very obvious to me on reflection that like, well, this can't be a universal solution, because it's so obvious that it doesn't work for everyone. And as I started to talk to people more and more, I began to realize like how much variety there was in how people successfully did it. And then I also started noticing, well, like for really like with an important and challenging habit, something like exercise, where there's kind of a lot of pieces to it, people might be doing a lot of different things to try to really solidify that habit. And I was all like tangled up in my head, and I was reading all this research, and like, I just couldn't figure out how it all mapped together. And then finally I'm like, okay, I have to come up with my own system. And that's what led me to identifying the 21 strategies. Cause once I got all those 21, I was like, everything that I heard, like any other thing I heard, fit into one of those categories. And the four tendencies came about because I saw these really striking patterns and how people respond even to the idea of habits. And I was trying to figure out, like, some people just, like, if I said, how do you feel about New Year's resolutions? That was a question that I would often ask to get people talking about how they felt about habits. Certain group of people would be like, well, I would never keep a New Year's resolution because January 1st is an arbitrary date. I'll do it whenever it makes sense. And I was like, huh. They always use that word arbitrary. And I was like, that's so interesting, because the arbitrariness of it never bothered me particularly. But for some people, that is like absolute deal breaker. And that's what started me thinking like, oh, there are questioners. And then I told somebody at a cocktail party that I was writing about habits, and she literally stepped back. She was so horrified by the subject. I'm like, oh, I love the subject of habits. I think it's really juicy. And she's like, why would you write about such a horrible subject? And then turns out she's one of my original rebels. And she told me so many things in that conversation that really gave me my first insight into the way the rebel perspective just sees things so differently from me as an upholder. So that's really how I started to dig into this subject of habits, which can be very confusing because there's so many parts to it that if you don't have like the big picture, they can feel very disjointed.
Right. Yeah. Or it's very much like this worked for me, therefore it will work for you is a lot of the advice. And it's like, actually, everyone's different.
Wait, and can I say, as somebody who writes about it, I now know that a lot of people who write books like I do, we're all upholders. And we think, oh, well, if you just do what I do, it'll work for you. And it's like, yeah, anything works for an upholder because that's the kind of people they are. But I'm like, but very few people are upholders. We got to think about the questioners and the obligers and the rebels. What works for them? Because they got their own tools and their own strategies that work really well for them.
Yeah. In wrapping, can you talk to us about, like, for someone who's like, okay, I want to start creating better habits while also taking into account like my personality type, what's one thing someone could get started thinking about or doing to get this going?
Okay. Great question, because it can feel very overwhelming. So where do you start? So a really great question to ask yourself is, when have I succeeded in the past? Because a lot of times, if you think about when you succeeded in the past, it has clues. So like I was talking to somebody who was like, I hate cooking. I can't eat healthy food. I have to eat out all the time because I hate to cook. And I said, well, was there any time when you like ate healthy meals at home as an adult? And she's like, well, there was this time when I lived in this group house in DC right after college. And I was like, okay, let's talk about that. And what she realized, and you might say, how does a person not know this about herself? But she really, truly had not understood this about herself. She didn't mind cooking. She hated food shopping. And when she lived in that group house, she had one of, you know, there are these people, my husband's one of them. They love to shop for food. They love, my husband once went to the grocery store 3 times in 1 day. They love to shop for food.
Sounds like me.
Yeah. And so she had this roommate who would like bring home like all this like fresh, wonderful food. And she didn't mind cooking at all. She didn't love cooking, but she didn't mind cooking. And she realized that was for her the sticking point. Well, that's a very different problem to solve, especially now. There's so many ways to get like food. And so looking at a time when you succeeded, or like a lot of obligers, it's like, well, is there a time in the past where you successfully exercised? It's like, oh yeah, my best friend and I signed up for this class and it was kind of expensive, but we never missed a class. And it's like, right, because you have accountability. You're going with a friend who's going to be annoyed if you don't show up, and you're paying for a class, so you're losing the money, and your instructor's expecting you to show up. There's some classes where like you're taking a slot, and if you don't show up, somebody else missed the chance to go. So, okay, so that's a sign that you need to create that for yourself in the future. So looking to the past can be really helpful. Another thing I would say is think about your body, because that's the strategy of foundation. And if you are exhausted, if you are overwhelmed, it's just very hard to work on your habits. So you want to think about getting enough sleep, getting some exercise, because we think of exercise as tiring us out, but really it gives us energy and it also helps us sleep. So if you have trouble sleeping, it'll help you sleep better. And it's just so good for memory and mood and immune function. And then finally, this isn't true for everyone, but it's true for a lot of people, is clearing clutter. For a lot of people, outer order contributes to inner calm and a sense of energy. And a lot, like a friend of mine said, I finally cleaned out my fridge and now I know I can switch careers. There's something like, if you have like a clean, uncluttered environment, a lot of people feel like that helps them with self-regulation. And it's kind of irrational, but over and over, people have told me that they feel that connection. And I definitely feel that myself. So if you think about sleep, exercise, eating and drinking enough and healthfully, and then clearing clutter. Some people are just clutter blind. My sister's like this. She doesn't see it. She doesn't care. It doesn't matter to her. Okay, fine. Don't worry about it unless somebody in your house protests. But for a lot of people, outer order really does give them that sense of energy and focus that helps them stick to a good habit.
So helpful. By the way, is your sister a rebel?
My sister's an obliger.
She's an obliger. Okay. Because you guys do your podcast together, right?
Yes.
I've heard her. Okay. And you guys are like,
yes,
talking back and forth about, yeah, like forming different habits.
Yes.
Well, can you let our listeners know where they can find out more about you and all the work that you're doing?
Yes, absolutely. So if you go to my website, GretchenRubin.com, you can find everything there. There's the quiz we talked about, the 4 Tendencies quiz, which is free. And like 3.5 million people have taken that quiz. We talked about a few of my books, like Better Than Before, which is about habit formation, The Happiness Project, which is all about happiness, Outer Order, Inner Calm, which is like quick tips for how to create outer order, which is just like a fun little book. And then there's a whole book about the four tendencies. If somebody wants to go really deep into the four tendencies, there's my podcast, Happier with Gretchen Rubin. I've got a newsletter you can sign up, a free newsletter that comes out once a week with five things making me happy. You can sign up on my website, or you can follow me on social, all the usual places as Gretchen Rubin. And I love to hear from people with questions and comments and observations and suggestions. And my next book is called Life in Five Senses. And that's coming out April 18th. And it's all about how we can tap into our five senses to be happier, healthier, more productive, ooh, more creative. Yeah. So I that's love that. Super fun. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. It's very full circle to have read your books and then have you on the podcast. And yeah, especially for the new year, it's perfect timing. So I really appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, I so enjoyed it. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to another episode of the Food Heaven podcast. If you haven't already, make sure to connect with us online. We're most active on the gram at Food Heaven, but we're also on Facebook and Twitter at Food Heaven Show. If you like this podcast, make sure to rate, review, subscribe, and share with a friend.
Yep, our podcast is released every Wednesday, and each week we take a deep dive into topics like health at every size, food and culture, intuitive eating, mental health, and body acceptance. If you're looking for a sustainable and inclusive path to wellness, come hang out with us to learn how to take care of yourself from the inside out. We'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.